Hi, I'm Natalie Gochner. You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle, and I'm in the studio with co-host Shireen Gorbani on the left. Shireen, welcome.
Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you as well. And we have sitting in for Senator Dan McKay, another senator, Todd Weiler on the right.
Hi, Natalie.
Good
Hi,
to Shireen. See you, Todd.
Hey. Hi, Anthony.
Yeah, great to be here. And we want to do, a quick take with both of you on what is a very serious topic, but the situation of our country and Iran and this, I'll call it an assassination of Qassem Soleimani, the general, and all that's taken place since
Ding
there.
Ding dong, the terrorist is dead.
Oh, I tell you, Todd, this, I want to treat this with the seriousness it deserves and just say that my quick take is that it really affects the younger generation. This is, for some, a first international conflict like this.
This attack happened after 11 attacks by Iran on U.S. interests, including an attack on our embassy in Baghdad where they tried to kill Americans. So
you can't take that sitting down. The story on that keeps changing. And I think, if anything, we should look at Mike Lee's reaction today for the intelligence that he heard, the report that he heard. He does not feel like this was a justified attack. And I'm with you. I am Iranian-American. I am heartsick to think that we are going to engage in another protracted war that has no end. And I'm very worried, I would say more broadly, that our country, our Congress, has really given up war powers. We don't actually have robust debates about when we should engage in war anymore.
Well, Barack Obama did exactly the same thing that Trump did on a number of occasions, and I didn't hear any Democrats complaining then.
Okay, well, you weren't listening to me because I've actually been anti-war the whole time.
We're not in a war. I don't think we'll be in a war. But when Iran is attacking our ships, when they're attacking our drones, and they're attacking our embassies, I think it was more than time to let them know.
Todd, does the escalation not scare you?
Yeah, it scares me. I'm not sure that it's not done though. I'm not sure that we're not at the end of the current.
Well, let's hope that's right. But my quick take would be that for many in our state, we have about a third of our state who are children. Mm-hmm. This is their first conflict of this type.
Okay? Yeah, I'm not sure that that's true. Syria.
A good friend of mine just said that.
I'm saying where there's these missiles that have been launched at military bases, where we've used a drone to
Obama
take out
launched
a general.
Missiles. Obama was using drones to take out American citizens overseas.
Okay. I mean, I see it so differently,
but,
Todd.
But Obama
that's
did that.
Your hot take.
Obama did that, and we didn't go to war. I don't think we'll go to war.
I think you need
this time.
A fresher hot take. But I will say that there's a dear friend of mine told me that her third friend was deployed just yesterday. And so thinking about the toll that this will take on Utah families and thinking about those that have signed up, have the willingness to give everything to protect this country. I wish that we had a more stable, more clear, and really a much more firm understanding of what is going on and what we are asking people to sacrifice their lives for.
I'm in a campus environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I interact with students, what I see are students that are asking questions like, will we have a draft?
Yeah.
And I'm just like, this is interesting.
Yeah.
You know?
I think after Obama's ploy with giving Iran $1.8 billion in cash, I think the Trump administration needed to reestablish deterrence. And I think that was a great step in that direction.
Let's talk about Senator Lee for just a minute. Shireen, you mentioned him. He's had a track record of being against President Trump and then with President Trump. And now here he's come out and basically said this was the worst briefing I've seen in my time in the Senate. And you can tell that what's bothering him is who has the power, the Congress or the White House? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that we have not declared war. So you can say we're not at war, but we really have obliterated that line. It's gone. Mm-hmm. We didn't declare war on Vietnam. There's a long history of having this line moved for members of Congress who are supposed to have that responsibility. And though I agree with Mike Lee on very little, this is a place where I find a lot of common ground with him, thinking about where the decisions and how we talk about our engagement.
Well, I think the lines have been pretty clearly drawn over the last 50 years with the War Powers Act. What President Trump did last week, although it's shocking to many, is consistent with what all of his recent predecessors have also done. And if there's going to be a protracted war in Iran, it should be approved by Congress. It should go to Congress. But for an isolated military strike against a well-known terrorist, I think he's doing the same thing that Obama and Clinton and Bush all did before him.
So there's a lot of this that will come down to a presidential election where people can express their opinions. And Utah is going to be a Super Tuesday state this year. That means that very quickly here, unaffiliated voters have to affiliate if they want to vote in, say, the Republican, you know, primary on Super Tuesday. And my understanding is that those letters have gone out since we're a mail, you know, a mail-in vote.
Mail-only.
State. Yeah. And you have till about February 3rd to do this. Getting this about right, Shireen?
Yeah. So my understanding is there are over 200,000 unaffiliated voters in Salt Lake County. I think it's 600,000 statewide.
My husband got a letter, for example.
Yeah. And so
I saw that come in.
If you are committed to voting in the so this is just for the presidential, so for Super Tuesday. If you would like to vote in the Republican primary, you will have to affiliate as a Republican to do that. If you want the Democratic ballot, if you would like to be able to vote in the Democratic primary, you have a couple of options. You can either let your county clerk know that you would like that ballot and they will send it to you, or you can affiliate as a Democrat and it will come, but you've got to do it in the next few weeks.
Yeah. Let me ask both of you just to give me your read on what's going to happen on the impeachment trial, the debate between the House and the Senate. It's looking like the Senate Democrats are sort of breaking away from Pelosi and saying, you know, get us this stuff. We're ready for it.
Yeah.
Todd, give us your tea leaves. Read the tea leaves.
I think she's going to have to send the articles. I mean, I'm fine when she doesn't. I mean, we all know the ending to this story, which is why it's kind of a yawner. But I think it's a little bit intellectually dishonest to say for 2 months, we have to rush this. We have to rush this. We have to get this done before Christmas because it's so important. And then as soon as you get it done, to say, well, I'm not in any hurry to send
time's
it over.
Running out. Yeah, Shireen.
So in some ways, though, perhaps that strategy is working because what we're seeing is Bolton now releasing a letter saying that he is willing to come and testify. We are seeing additional information come out about the efforts of the Trump administration to work with the Office of Management and Budget to hold the aid going to Ukraine. And what we're also seeing that I think is particularly interesting is Murkowski and a few others saying we should have a fair process. We should have something that feels transparent, that takes this moment as seriously as it is. So that information has come out. Those statements have come out in the last few weeks. And so in some respects, I can see the logic in saying, setting up the platform to have that conversation.
What's even more interesting, Natalie, is Joe Biden said even if he's subpoenaed, he will refuse to testify, which is the very basis of the second article of impeachment, abuse of Congress, not abiding by subpoenas. So John Bolton saying that he's willing to testify, I think that's great. I think he should testify. But he's only going to testify if he gets called as a witness. And I'm not convinced that Mitch McConnell is going to let that happen.
Yeah, really interesting. Hey, we've got so much local news. We've got a new mayor inaugurated in the capital city. We've got a governor's race, new candidates that have been announced. So I want to save a lot of time for the local segment. And so I'm with Todd Weiler and Shireen Gorbani. Natalie Gochner, we'll be right back.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle on KCPW. For more episodes of all our in-house podcasts, click on the Local Programs tab at kcpw.org. And while you're there, please consider donating to KCPW to support public radio in your community.
This is Todd Weiler from the right.
Shireen Gorbani on the left.
Natalie Gochner. I'm in the political center, and this is Both Sides of the Aisle. We've got new candidates for governor. Greg Hughes finally out. Thomas Wright finally out. I think we've got six major, I guess, mainstream candidates on the Republican side. Shireen, you can comment on the Democratic side. We're still like just waiting for the big mainstream Democratic candidate.
We have Zachary Moss. Is there going to be another Democrat?
I think there will be.
What? Oh, Zachary Moses. Sorry. Why? I mean, how many Democrats do you need running for governor?
Shireen, I would ask you the same.
Give us timing. What would you say?
So I think we have a couple of people who are very serious about it. It's certainly not my business to be announcing that here.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think that we'll be hearing some names very soon.
By the end of the month.
I'm not sure, but I think we're getting close.
Yeah. Okay. Well, so I want to. We had something really interesting happen with Greg Hughes. So former Speaker of the House, the last one to get in. But he makes clear, makes clear that he's not going to collect signatures.
I think it's a mistake for him, but let me just give you the background. Number one, there's only two signature gathering companies in the state, and they're already locked up by other candidates. So I don't think he had a lot of choice there.
So Cox has his locked up?
Well, no, Cox is doing all volunteers.
Okay.
So number two, this is a guy who voted in favor of Senate Bill 54, which created the signature path to the ballot. So I think the strategy is he's hoping to go to the delegates and say, hey, I'm the only one that didn't gather signatures, so I need your vote to get me through the primary. But I think that's going to be negated by the fact that he voted for Senate Bill 54 and as Speaker over 4 years did not repeal
it.
Didn't repeal it. So number three, I think you're going to have other signature candidates like Amy Winder Newton who find that they're not going to be able to collect 28,000 signatures with volunteers. And so they're going to drop the signature efforts. And I don't think Amy will be the only one. And then they're going to go to delegates and say, hey, now I'm a convention-only candidate as well. So,
Shireen, a lot of this is Republican inside baseball, but Todd knows so much about some of that Republican inside baseball. I just want to try this for a moment. And you jump in.
Okay, great.
So you say Cox is volunteer.
Yeah.
Certainly Wright has Gather. A big signature gathering.
Gather is with, they've been contracted, but I don't know if they've announced who their candidate is.
Okay, there's only two.
But
Gather and who else?
Chuck Warren has a company. I'm not sure what it's called.
This is really inside baseball.
And
who's using that one?
I'm not sure. I just know that they're both locked up. And so I would guess that Thomas Wright and Jeff Birmingham are the two that have locked them up. But I don't know for sure. That's just a guess.
Yeah. Okay.
But
so I think it's interesting that, can we talk about the process really quickly?
Yeah.
So it's 28,000 signatures, correct?
Uh-huh. Verified.
Verified signatures. And then what's the dispersal across counties?
There isn't one. Yeah, there isn't.
Come on.
Governor.
No.
Really?
Yeah. For not.
Yeah.
There is
oh,
not.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, so the listeners need to know why I was reacting that way. I knew a lot about Count
because
My Vote.
For
where you needed
and referendums.
Where you needed 26 of 29 Senate districts.
Yeah.
You're saying that that's not how it is statewide?
Not for the signature path.
Okay, so that's really interesting to know.
It is interesting. So I think that's an important part of it, right? And when you think about where you're going to get 28,000 signatures, I decided to do it in part when I was running for Congress because my name's Shireen Gourvani. I came out of nowhere.
But needed 7,000.
7,000.
Yeah.
And they didn't. They could have all been from Salt Lake County in that case, too.
Yeah.
But it is really difficult. It's really difficult to get.
People don't know. And what happens is the first one you sign is the one that gets certified.
No. The first one you sign that gets turned in.
Okay.
So you could sign three, and the third one could be the first one turned in, and that's
but
the
as
one
long as
count.
People, so they'll turn them in as quickly as they can.
Yes, they will.
The other thing, so I'm collecting signatures.
Listeners are probably going, what do these people care?
I'm collecting
signatures.
This
is a new thing in our state to do this, and it's changing sort of the rules of the game. And it's actually, when you have six serious Republican candidates going for an open seat, these things all really matter.
It takes about an hour to collect 10 signatures if you're going door to door. So start calculating the number of hours for 28,000. Mitt Romney put out 5,000 packets to volunteers, collected 80,000 signatures total, but just over, I think, 28,000 were actually certified. So you can't just collect 28,000. You need more than that because people
so
sign
certified
with the wrong
means
address.
You live in the state,
they're
that
valid,
you vote, that
you're registered
Republican.
Voter.
Yeah.
Registered voter Republican.
And registered Republican.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, so back to the politics. You've got these six candidates. Arguably, the June 30th Republican primaries, when we'll pick our next governor.
We moved it back 1 week.
And
pick
sorry
our next
if that's offensive
candidate.
To the Democrats and to Shireen, but just go with me here.
I'll just keep riding along.
Yeah. So you've got 20 to 30% you can become governor of Utah.
Theoretically, but I think what you'll see is by June, you're going to have two of the primary ballot candidates will emerge as the front runners, and the other ones are going to be down in the 5% and 6%.
Any chance one of them decides to run as an independent?
It would be John Huntsman, but his campaign is telling people that option is not on the table.
Yeah.
I'm not convinced of that. But right now, that's the story.
So what I want to say to the listeners, just apologize for all the inside baseball kind of conversation there, but grab your big bucket of popcorn and get ready to watch this.
There are going to be so many egos hurt in the next 5 months.
So I'm in St. George tomorrow moderating a candidate forum with most of these candidates.
Yeah.
So
and they're,
I'll learn
I know,
a lot there.
I know all of them. They're all good people. I think any one of them would have their own vision as a governor. I don't think we're going to be in bad hands with any
these
of them.
These are great candidates.
But
totally
only
agree.
One of them is going to win.
Yeah.
So
Governor Herbert, because of tax reform, announced his budget very late on January 8th. Normally it would be December 8th.
December 8th.
It's about a month later. Goes public with a $20 billion state budget.
Mm-hmm.
That's first is the scale of this. I think the highlight would be the largest recommendation ever for public education.
$500 million.
No. $4.9 billion.
I'm sorry.
In K through 12.
New money is $500 million. new money.
A couple of things that caught my eye. He's got another $100 million in there for air quality.
Yeah, which he did last year and only got funded $20 million. I think it's important, Natalie, for your viewers to know the governor's job is to recommend a budget. It's kind of his wish list. Mm-hmm. But the purse strings in the state are held by the legislature. I get emails every year saying, do your job and pass the governor's budget. That's not my job. My job is to come up with a legislative
budget. So he's
budget.
The chief elected officer statewide, and he's saying, these are my recommendations to the legislature. He's got another one, Shireen. He's recommended a freeze on tuition in our institutions
college,
of higher learning.
Yeah.
Yes. So I think there are many interesting things in this budget because what is the old saying? Budgets are a reflection of our values. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really important to go and take some time and look through what it is that is being proposed here and what that really does strike out as a vision for who he is as a leader in this state. I would say, you know, as a person who's a Democrat, quite liberal, I was excited to see many of these proposals come forward. What will happen when it comes to our state legislature is entirely going to disappoint me, but I'm still, again, along for the ride.
So 96% of his budget is what we did last year, so that's not going to change. So the fight is over the other 4%, so he'll probably get at least 98% of that budget.
But to Shireen's point, we tend to have, I would argue, we have had for years very moderate, pragmatic governors.
Mm-hmm.
Bangeter, Leavitt, Walker, Herbert, Huntsman. I could name the
Cox.
Governors. Wow.
Cox.
Well, whoever it's going to be. But they tend to have very pragmatic proposals that are very popular, and we have very popular governors.
Mm-hmm.
But Governor did something interesting. So Governor Herbert's announcing his budget, and he makes it a point to call out Spencer Cox's leadership on the Rio Grande and homelessness and mental health.
Are you saying there's some politics involved?
Well, how did you two read that?
Well, I think he's chosen his horse, and he's going to ride it to the finish line. So,
Shireen?
I'm afraid it's a little tone deaf to some of the conversations that we're having in Salt Lake City right now around how people are feeling about what did happen with Operation Rio Grande and the protests that we've been seeing recently, feeling that there aren't enough beds, that there isn't enough to catch people when they are really in that very unstable place. So I'm surprised. I think in this moment, it's an interesting statement to make given the exact politics of this moment and this issue.
Well, remember 2.5 years ago, there were 2 murders in a few weeks. You know, in that section, there were hundreds of people behind the Rio Grande camping out, sharing needles, you know, sleeping on the street.
You're just saying it's better than it was.
It's been cleaned up. And I'm not saying that we're done. But, you know, that's Spencer Cox, that's Greg Hughes and John Pierpont. Two of those three are running for governor.
Yeah, so. Interesting. Well, I think it's interesting because he has picked his horse. And something interesting that I think is going to happen, you know, in my experience, governor's races are all about the vision and about the future. But what you tend to do is run against the current administration,
yes,
the status quo.
Yeah.
And I think that puts Spencer Cox in a very unusual position, needless to say, because he wants the governor's support and the governor's money. And Governor Herbert has a great record.
Yeah.
But there's going to be all these candidates piling on with their new ideas.
Any one of those candidates would take Gary Herbert's endorsement if they could get it. I mean, he's a popular governor.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot to run against. I mean, I guess you could say the tax on food and things like that. By the way, the proposed budget that he released today is all built on the tax reform package.
Right.
If those signature gatherers on the referendum, if they turn in enough signatures, 116,000 in 2 weeks, then that whole tax reform package gets put on hold and this whole budget's out the window.
Yeah.
So
I'm going to go to another local issue. Mayor. I keep calling her mayor-elect, but Mayor Erin Mendenhall was sworn in this week. Yeah. I attended the inauguration, an oath of office, they call it. It was on the east steps of the city and county building. It was impressive. I just got to say that. It was first Monday in January. It was sunny and blue sky. They had all of the city council members sitting on the stairs there, and there's this diversity that comes out. The new city councilwoman, who's from Argentina, gave her remarks in Spanish. And after Erin Mendenhall gave her speech, they had a performance by some Mexican dancers with all this color and this music.
I think that's wonderful.
Yeah.
Well, it really was. Yeah. I was just sitting there going, this is such a proud city. And I got to...
Welcome to 2020.
Yeah, I just had to tip my hat to what I saw, Erin Mendenhall, something interesting. She had on this stunning blue coat. And it's really, women get really crazy when you talk about what women wear, you know, in a political setting. But go with me,
okay,
Shereen.
I can see you're looking at me.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, she's got this beautiful blue coat. Yeah. And I just thought, wow, that is stunning. And it was her grandmother's.
Yeah.
Do you know this?
Yeah.
You've heard that.
Well, and I am such an advocate for color. I think it's important when you're in these spaces.
You're wearing beautiful color today.
I have gotten a little wild today.
It's
got some orange on. It's orange.
It's orange. But I think it's important to have, especially in that setting, which is very gray. You've got, you know, this big gray building.
Sure.
There's a little bit of kind of red, to have something that really stands out. And the pictures are beautiful. And I do think it's a nice way to kind of just have that that pop. That draws your eye.
So, Natalie, what color tie was James Rogers wearing?
I don't know, but there were some beautiful socks and there were some scarves that were colorful. But what was interesting to me is Erin Mendenhall has a way of expressing herself that is so genuine, so authentic. It's just a really compelling message, the way she shares things. So she acknowledged her husband and her children, and then she acknowledged the parents. Then she acknowledged her father, who's passed away many, many years ago, but said she felt his presence. And then she said, and I feel my grandmother's, and I'm wearing her coat.
Well, that's nice.
So it was just, you know, it was just a really how inaugurals should be. Inaugurals are not political to me. They're personal.
Can I tell you, Erin Mendenhall is getting a honeymoon that from the media and from, I think, the legislature that Jackie Paskowski never got.
Yeah.
And I think
part
of it is because Jackie asked for everyone's resignation before she took office. And I think it just threw everybody into a tizzy. So.
Well, there's some of that. And I've been to Mayor Paskowski's inaugural, but there was something that Erin did that was really interesting. It was very, very inclusive. And I saw her thanking people in a really broad sense. And so I just, you know, she's got a way of creating a very big and round table.
Erin's a natural leader, and I look for great things from her. I think it's, I just lost my train of thought.
I was going to say, I think it's interesting that she came from this background of activism around air quality, having, you know, clean air be such a central force for the work that she does and the lens that she has, and to know that she was there on a day when we have often some of the worst air quality. Mm-hmm. You know, this is not a good time for our air quality, that it is actually just a blue sky. This administration, I believe, will be such a breath of fresh air in so many ways. And I'm really excited about that.
I think Mayor Mendenhall should send Mayor Jenny Wilson a big thank you letter, because the legislature, especially the far-right Republicans in the House, are going to be so busy this session trying to put Jenny Wilson in her place on guns that the Mayor Mendenhall is going to get a pass.
Some free. Hey, so, one other thing on Salt Lake City. They got news this week that the judge ruled against the Inland Port case of the city. Todd, you're an attorney. Can you give us a little bit?
I actually read all the briefs.
Oh, my goodness. This is Local Powers Act the Ripper Clause.
There's a weird provision in the Utah Constitution that's rarely been invoked, and the opponents of the Inland Port were hanging their hat on this, saying that the legislature had overstepped its bounds and had violated this constitutional provision. The district court judge, who's a very good judge, by the way, did not agree with them. I'm sure that decision will be appealed to the Utah Supreme Court. So I don't think it's quite over yet.
Shereen, do you want to say anything on that? I mean, you're a local government official. This is a state coming down on a local government. But
yeah, one of my favorite things about Utah is that everyone's into local control until they're not, right? So there's a real community organization around trying to get answers and understand this. And I am worried that this kind of just continues to make people very confused about what is the future of the Inland Port. Frankly, what's the past of the Inland Port? And there are many people out there in the community that are doing a lot of work on podcasts or different places. D2C just did an incredible interview that really goes through the history of what's happened and where we're going. And I just know that it's hard for a lot of people to wrap really wrap their heads around the finer details.
It almost sounds like a gripe, but you can do another one. Todd, do you have a gripe for us today?
Oh, I didn't come prepared with a gripe, but let me just gripe about the Inland Port, because I think this is something that was started by Democrats in Salt Lake County. The legislature stepped into it with a very big footprint. But the first one that told me about the Inland Port was Ben McAdams, and how excited he was. This was 3 years ago about this. Salt Lake City Council was signing contracts 3 years ago. And now somehow it's a Republican legislative boondoggle. But I think the Inland Port will happen. I think it'll be great for the city.
Shereen.
I would say one of the things that I will gripe about, I'm going to do a gratitude.
Okay, that's fair.
I have a lot of gratitude for the signature gatherers that are out working on the referendum, and I'll tell you why. I think anytime people are getting organized, when they are talking to their neighbors, when they are out in their communities building connections, it matters. And the work that is happening, the people that are working in every corner of the state deserve acknowledgement for and recognition, I think, for doing what is certainly a Herculean effort. As we mentioned, you can gather 28,000 signatures to be the governor and you can do them all in one county, but that is not the case for our referendums or for our ballot initiatives. So a lot of important and really hard work is happening.
Good. I'm going to do a gripe, Todd, and you kind of inspired it, so fair warning there. But it really troubles me that the legislature takes the governor's budget and just torches it and just, you know, basically says, you know, that's our job, but thank you.
I just said that we passed 98% of it.
No, but at the same time, you say, but we got to remember that's not the governor's job. And I have just, my experience has been that the legislature doesn't pay enough attention to all of the great thinking that goes into the executive branch's budget.
So you've worked in the governor. Let me just say, the governor's involved. The governor can veto the legislative budget if he needs to. So he has a lot of power.
You're listening to Both Sides of the Aisle. I've been with Shireen Gorbani and Todd Weiler. Programs produced by Anthony Scoma. Thanks for listening.